This station is not responsible for the problems that Mark may cause for the following. Wives, mothers, daughters, ex-wives, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, stepmothers, daughters, and in-laws. If you find yourself agreeing with everything Mark says, please seek professional help.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Salem, and sitting here next to me is Andy, and this is 2 hours of The Car Show. If you'd like to join us, it's pretty simple. All you got to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we'll take your call. What we'd like you to do is tell us about your make and model of your car, and then we'll talk about the symptoms, and then we'll go from there. So we're real interested in the symptoms, and I'll tell you why the symptoms are so important. Okay, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Had a gentleman call me on Yelp or send me a message on Yelp, mm-hmm. and he says, "How much to rebuild my Jeep's transmission?" Mm-hmm. Do you know what kind of time it would take me to bid something like that? It could take 45 minutes. And here's the problem. I don't know if it's a 3-speed, 4-speed, or 5-speed. I don't know what year it is. I don't know how many miles are on it. I don't know anything. So all I know is he thinks he needs a rebuilt transmission.
Yeah.
So I write back to him and I say, with all due respect, this message is kind of like this. How much to paint my house? Mm-hmm. Well, you don't know if it's a 3-story white house. Like where what's-his-name lives in. You don't know if it's that kind of house or if it's a little bungalow on a small street and it's 850 square feet, slightly bigger than a travel trailer. You just don't know.
Yeah.
So I said to him, a couple of tips here. Whoever diagnoses it, fixes it. Mm-hmm. So you don't have shop A diagnosis and shop B fix it. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So shop A says it's this, and shop B fixes this, but it doesn't fix the problem. So now the customer, who are they mad at? So shop A says, I diagnosed it right, and shop B said, no, he didn't. Mm-hmm. And shop A says, well, he didn't fix it right.
Yeah.
So now we got these two shops pointing at one another, and the customer's in the middle, and for all intents and purposes, they both can tell the customer to go fly a kite.
Yeah.
And the shop B is going to say, I was hired to do what you told me to do, mm-hmm. and that's what I did. Shop A says, no, I diagnosed it this way. Well, the common denominator between shop A and B is the customer.
Yeah.
So I write him back, and I say, you know, I kind of need more symptoms.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I'm driving down the road and everything's fine. And then he says, all of a sudden it stops moving. And he says, and so I'm putting it in all the gears and it won't move. And he says, and finally I put it in fourth gear and I can finally get it to kind of limp home.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bad clutch.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with the transmission.
Yeah. We had a customer come in just the other day that came in and said, the transmission's gone out, this and that. It was a Jeep, exactly. I mean, identical symptoms. And it ended up being a clutch.
Yeah.
It wasn't a transmission.
And what was the bid on that? Do you remember?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember. I don't remember. It's probably been a month or so ago. But just with those estimates, you know, a lot of times I think they just want a ballpark. Like, are we talking $500? Are we talking $2,500? Which I get. But then no matter what you tell them, that's what they get stuck in their minds. And then if it's more, they're upset. You know, of course, if it's less, they're happy. But,
well,
but it's just kind of a no-win. You know, 9 times out of 10, you get in there and just like that, it's that the transmission is not even the issue. Or what they're calling and wasting their time and bidding is not the issue.
Right.
So,
And what happens, too, is that if you bid it high to cover all your bases, there's going to be some idiot out there that's going to undercut you, but he's not going to have sales tax, environmental charges, shop supplies. He's not going to have fluid because he didn't bid change in the transmission fluid when he had the transmission out. So there's all these different things that go on.
Yeah.
And when we bid a clutch, it could be the clutch, the pressure plate, and the throwout bearing, and the labor. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
But what happens if the hydraulics are bad, which is the slave cylinder and the master cylinder, if it has a hydraulic clutch? That's $200 worth of parts and labor.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to open those doors up, and that's where experience comes in. If you talk to some three-whiskered kid on the phone that doesn't even know what a hydraulic clutch is, then you're wasting your time. But the real issue is now... The guy comes in, and if he would have said to you, and you run our shop, if he would have said, I want somebody to look at it and just tell me what it is. Give me a diagnostic number that you think. Give me a range of a diagnostic. We would have charged him to go drive the car, do a physical inspection, and tell him and look him straight in the eye and say, this is what your clutch, or here, this is what your Jeep needs. So,
I would have probably said anywhere from You mean $35 to $75?
That's exactly what I told him.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I told him. I said, you know, you're going to be $50, give or take 25 bucks, and we're going to tell you exactly what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
As far as a ballpark figure is concerned, I don't know what all's wrong. I don't know if the fork's going to be bad. I know a throw-out bearing and a clutch. A disc I'm going to replace. I don't know how bad the flywheel is, but I do want to turn the flywheel and put a new record player kind of finish on it. And on top of all of that, when I have your transmission out, wouldn't you like me to drain it and refill it?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about the rear tranny mount to see if it's good or not, because you got 140,000 miles on your Jeep. So these are all iffy things.
Yeah.
So I can cover those during my visual inspection and my diagnostic time, but you'll get an estimate. And then I'm going to give it to you piece by piece, so that if you don't want to do the rear mount, you know that that rear mount is $60, but there's no labor because I had to take it out anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's
Michael,
kind of
your first call in, Michael.
I just think, I mean, a lot of times, too, the people aren't asking the right questions to the places that they're calling either. So they're not really armed with the correct information. You know, shop A is saying shocks are, you know, $1,000. Shop B is saying it's $1,500, and they don't know what the difference is. Is it parts? Is it labor? Does one have tax? Does one not? You know, it's just...
Are they struts or shocks?
Yeah.
And if they're struts, are they gas shocks or are they oil struts?
Yeah.
Gas strut or oil strut? And does the strut come with the upper mount or not?
Yeah.
And then is the alignment for $75 in there?
Yeah, in there or not included, or it's just...
So I think the message here is when you call around... I think you start off with, can I borrow a few minutes of your time, and let me tell you what I got and what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the next question is what would you charge me to look at this?
Mm-hmm.
Some shops are going to say zero. Some shops are going to give you a parameter, because we don't really know how much of your time you're going to take us. If you take off with my senior technician and you're gone for 30 minutes, when you get back, I'm going to be really mad.
Yeah, and I think some people say, you know, no one charges for checkout. You know, I've heard customers say... somebody wanted to charge for an oil leak, you know.
Yeah.
They wanted to charge me, you know, X amount just to look at it. And what, I mean, you don't understand is it's not just, you know, there's a lot to it. We pull it in, we rack it, we clean. If it's checking for a leak, you pull it in, you rack it, you put it up in the air, you look at the area, you clean it off, you know, you run the vehicle. I mean, there's a lot to it. It's just not like... you know, walking under it and point, oh, that's it.
Yeah, well,
it's just this, you know.
It's kind of like a guy with a man bun on his head, okay? And he comes in and he's got blood running all the way around his head.
Yeah.
Okay? You don't know if his ear's cut. You don't know if the cut is in the front of his head and the back of the head. You don't even know if he's cut at all. But with oil, we have to clean the area up. We put dye in the oil.
Yeah.
Then we go drive the thing for 15 minutes to circulate the dye, bring it back in. We put on funky glasses.
Mm-hmm.
We get this funky light, and under the best of conditions, we'll be able to see exactly, because the lime green oil stripe will come show us exactly where the oil leaks at. Now, from there, we have to look up the gaskets, we have to look up the labor, and all of that takes time.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, there could be multiple leaks, not just one leak. We don't know how long you've been driving, and maybe not all of a sudden you're seeing a leak on the ground, but you could have had one that was caught by the splash shield, and... so it's just there's so many different pieces to it, and not to mention when you have a leak and you drive, then it just spreads all over the engine compartment and back towards the exhaust. So you could have oil everywhere, and
right.
it's you know.
And what kind of oil is it? Is it power steering? Is it transmission?
Sure.
Is it engine? Is it dirty coolant? Is it brake fluid? Is it oil from the shock absorbers? Is it grease from the axles? We got to figure that out. So it's really helpful if you're involved in that. But I also want to tell you that most of the time in our industry, the diagnostic stands on its own. It's not normally folded into the repair. However, if we pull the front cover off your motor to look at your timing belt, and we've determined it needs a timing belt, we bring you into the shop and show you a new one, show you the one you got. There's going to be a little bit of a difference there. We're going to give you a credit because we've already done some of the work.
Yes.
But most of the time, the diagnostic charge stands on its own.
Or if it doesn't, they've rolled it into the price of the repair sometimes.
Yeah,
we've seen that as well.
You're going to pay for it one way or the other, I can tell you that. All right, Gil, who we got first?
Michael.
Michael, good morning to you. How can I help you? Hi, Michael.
Be there.
Michael. We're going to give him a minute because he waited for us. So we're going to give him. Anybody else has got a call or got a car question, 602-508-0960. Now, we don't want to turn it into a this is what happened to me thing, but we can. You're just not allowed to name the shop, and you're not allowed to tell where the shop's at. Don't give us, oh, I can't name the shop, but he's at 7th Street in Camelback. No, that's not going to work for us. So we want
Bernie
you to
is your next caller.
Behave yourselves. Bernie, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I'm going to give you I had a problem with a 2000 Ford Ranger. It has a 3.0 in it.
Okay.
And it was hard to start in the morning. You would have to crank it over for about 5 seconds. And then whenever you stopped it and started it soon after, it'd be fine.
Okay.
So we're going on a 2,500-mile trip.
2 minutes.
And I decided to change the spark plugs and also the fuel filter.
Okay.
So we replaced the plugs, I cleaned the battery terminals, my son put in the fuel filter, and we cranked and cranked and cranked, and looking and found out, you know, he bled the engine up the top by the, wherever the...
It's where the...
He bled that little bleeder, and...
Okay.
But we just couldn't get it to start, so I told him, put the old filter back on, and after cranking it maybe 5 minutes, we got it to start.
Okay.
So then we replaced put the new filter back on, bled it again, and it started, and it was fine. But now the symptom that I'm worried about is that first thing in the morning.
Okay, stop. This can go on, you know, for a long time.
1 minute.
You have a problem where you're leaking the fuel pressure down overnight. So you've got an injector leaking. You've got a fuel pressure regulator leaking. You've got a bad check valve in the tank. You've got a problem. And what you don't know is you've wasted a whole lot of money and a whole lot of time. All you have to do is call somebody. And I would have said to you, in the morning when you know it's not going to start, turn the key on, but not to the crank position. Turn the key on, count to three, shut the key off. I want you to do that 5 times. The computer, when you turn the key on, the computer turns on the pump, but if it doesn't see the RPM change, so cranking speed's 200, and if it just stays at 200, after 3 seconds, the computer shuts off the fuel pump. You're not going to get it running. The computer's not going to let you. So you can crank until we're all dead and buried, and you ain't going to get fuel up front, unless you cycle the key on, count to three, and turn it off. Now, you're repriming the system. So it had nothing to do with your son and the fuel filter and the new fuel filter and the old fuel filter. That has nothing to do with it. Someone needs to take your car and keep it overnight. They need to see what the fuel pressure is when they park it, and it takes specific equipment to do that. You're not going to use an air gauge on the Schrader valve because that's not going to work. So we hook up a gauge, and then the next morning we look. It's got 45 pounds when we parked it. The next morning it has zero. Okay, we got to find out where the leak's at. So we're going to look at the spark plugs to see if one of them's black or one of them's a different color. We're going to look at the fuel pressure regulator to see if it's leaking like crazy. And if not, we're going to pinch off the return line, go into the pump. We're going to let it sit overnight. So now it's there 2 days, and the next morning, boom, we still have pressure. Okay, we got to go into the tank. That's what it's all about. The diagnostic fee is $75 to $125, and you have a fuel delivery leak down overnight. Because, like you said, during the day, everything's fine. So we know that we go from 40 pounds of pressure, and I'm just using stupid numbers because I don't know what your Ford uses. 40 pounds of pressure, and over a period of 2 or 3 hours, it drops to 39. No harm, no foul. But over a period of 8 or 10 hours, it drops to zero, and that's the reason why it doesn't start. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Some buttons here and get the tape on and stuff like that. Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa. Why is that important? Because they're the only shop that Mark Salem says can do a good job. Now, others have applied, but they just didn't make the muster. And one of the things that most of them can't do is they don't have 5 years of experience at the same location. That's important to me. And I'll tell you why. A lot of car repair shops come and go in that first 5 years. So I want guys who are financially stable, and I want guys that have demonstrated that they have really good reviews. So Thompson's is on Apache Boulevard or Main Street, just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair. They're good people. So if you're due for service, if you need a flat repair, if you need somebody to look an oil leak, if you need somebody to check your battery, if you just want to stop by, make an appointment for an oil change and see how they treat you, that's a great way to introduce yourself to a new shop. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, been around in Mesa since 1970 on Main Street just east of Stapley. Michael, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2000 Buick Century with 120,000 miles on it. Last year, my battery, I would get in the car to start it up, and the battery wasn't that old, and it would about every 10 days or so, it would, just barely start. It acted like the battery had been drained. So finally, I got fed up, so in December, I told the AutoZone man I want to switch out the battery, and he said, as he was doing the prorating, he said, okay, we'll switch out the battery, and then we'll be able to check that off as a possible problem. So it's still doing it with a new battery, and
okay.
Well, I was wondering if you have any thoughts.
Well, yeah. What you have, we have to use the right words here. You have a slow, cold start, okay? So it's cranking over very slow, only cold. I wouldn't have done what you've done. I would have had somebody test the electrical system, and that's probably $35-45.
Mm-hmm.
Check the alternator for idle amps and total amps. Check the diode pattern to make sure all the diodes haven't, none of the pops, diodes have popped. Look at the stator on the screen. We would look at shorts and draws, and then we would load test the battery. Here's the deal. The battery has to have, a 12-volt battery has to have 9.6 in order to crank the motor over, 9.6 volts. Most of them are going to go from 12.5 to 12.8, and they're going to drop to 11.6, 11.8. We got plenty of reserve there. So the question really is your starter drawing, we want the starter to draw 250, 300 amps when it cranks over cold. Is it drawing 500, 600, 700? Now, if it's drawing those big amps, is it because of a bad battery connection or a bad starter connection? So after we put a wrench on those, we go, nope, that's not it. So now we know that your starter's drawing 500, 600, 700 amps. We know the starter's bad. So then what we do is we hook up another battery to your battery, and we hit the key again. Now it cranks over faster, but it's still drawn 500, 600, 700 amps. So at that point, we bid a starter, and you pay $35 to $75 for an electrical system. But that kind of testing is not available through the auto parts store with the three-whiskered kit. They don't have that. They can't look at a diode trio. They can't look at a stator. They don't understand that from a static voltage point, we take the voltage at your battery when it's parked there. Now, believe it or not, a fully charged 12-volt battery is actually at 13 volts. So we check the amp or the voltage at the beginning, and we want to see 12.6, 12.7, 12.8, 12.9, 13. When this alternator fires up, we want to see 1 volt over that. So if it's 12.6, we want to see 13.6. These are the tricks that the old gray-haired guys know. These are the tricks that the master technician knows. And that's why it's important to find somebody other than the three-whiskered kid that's going to give you a free diagnosis at the auto parts store. But his free diagnosis is worth nothing. It's a guess, and he's guessing with your money. So, and here's something else. If the battery has 12.1 or 11.9, you can do all the testing in the world, but when the battery is in that state of discharge, you cannot properly test the electrical system. So you either bring the battery back up to 12.5, 12.6, 12.9, 11, or 12.13, I should say, or you stick in a new one and run your tests.
Do you think I have my alternator is going out?
I don't know.
Is this happening, you said something about every 10 days or something like that. Is it that intermittent?
Oh, it's very intermittent, Renee, yeah.
Okay.
So on a cold crank start, I mean, you could get a voltmeter. Any shop could help you do that. Get a voltmeter and connect it to a cigarette lighter plug-in, and now you could read the voltage from inside the car. You're not going to know good or bad. You're just going to write down what it is. So you're going to say, hey, my garage, let's pretend it's Jake's garage. Hey, Jake, when it's everything's fine, the voltage is like 12.1 to 11.8. But when it's not fine, the voltage drops all the way to 9.6. That's going to be very helpful. You've just saved yourself $25 worth of check-in because we know it's intermittent. But what we know now is it's an amp draw problem. So is the battery shorting out or the cable shorting out or is the starter acting up? And that will give us some guidance.
If I did go to a shop and paid $45, $75 for an electrical system test, do you think they'd be able to find the source of it?
If you left it overnight and let them start it first thing in the morning, yes, I do. But if you take it in there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you already got through saying this is a cold start problem. This is a slow crank in the morning. So we need it in the morning.
Yeah.
Actually, it can be a warm start problem.
Okay.
I've done it when it has been a warm start problem. I can think of two times that it was warm start and it was a problem. So.
Okay. I would say, yeah. I mean, these kind of things, if it's not happening every single start, that's from the shop's perspective, that's where it gets kind of tough. So you just, if you can leave it for the day, overnight, and let that shop test it numerous times and when it happens, obviously.
You only have two choices. Either you leave it there and let them have it for a while, or you guess with your money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we already know it ain't the battery. So at 120,000 miles, if that's the original starter, here's your choice, Mike. I'll put a starter in for you for $250. I'm guessing that's close.
Yeah.
Starter, solenoid, labor, and all that kind of stuff. And I'll put it, but we're guessing with your money, but that's the best educated guess I can give you because I'm going to trust that it had a new battery that was fully charged put in your car. So if it's still doing with the new battery, then the next logical thing would be the starter. And I'd buy a starter solenoid package. So I wouldn't buy just the starter and put the old solenoid on. I would buy a starter with a matching solenoid, and I'd buy one with a name brand. That would be important. Well, good luck to you, Michael. I appreciate your call. Mark, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hello, Mark. How are you this morning?
Good.
Hey, I've got a 2005 Ford F-150 Lariat. I guess they call it crew cab,
okay,
with the small back doors,
okay.
5.4 engine. I've got two symptoms, and they may be connected. The first symptom is whenever I start from a dead stop, there's a clunk,
okay,
a little bit of a clunk, slight hesitation, and you feel it more than you hear it. The second symptom, it will happen anywhere from 45 miles an hour all the way up to in the 70-mile-an-hour range on occasion, very intermittent. It feels to me like the transmission is trying to shift down out of overdrive, and it keeps popping back and forth between overdrive.
Okay.
And one thing I did try is I disengaged the overdrive, and it stops it completely. It never does it.
Okay.
If I have overdrive engaged, it doesn't work.
Okay. We got two different issues, but the overdrive is a really good symptom. You did a great job there. Next thing I want you to do is when it starts going up and down, it feels like it's shifting from fifth to sixth and back to fifth and up to sixth and back and forth and so forth. I want you to take your left foot and just gently ride the brake pedal, not enough to slow the car down, but enough to shine the lights.
Wonderful.
And that should also make it go away. Okay, so when we brake, we unlock the converter. So you're going to apply the brake, and it's going to go away, and you're going to let go, and it's going to come back. As far as the clunk is concerned, something shifting in the suspension, that shouldn't be too hard to find. We're still talking $25 to $75 diagnostic fee if it has to hit the alignment rack. But you've got a suspension shift, so when you come to an abrupt stop, there's probably a clunk. And if you take off kind of hard, there's going to be another clunk as something's moving forward and moving back on your fork.
Could it also be a mount?
I listened carefully to what he said, and he said he had two symptoms. And then all of a sudden, I'm thinking to myself, it's a mount.
Uh-huh.
But it's not because the isn't going to be a mount related.
No, but the clunk on acceleration?
Well, on acceleration, he would say that I would move 10, 12 feet, and then I would get a clunk because when he throttles up hard, it would lift the motor off the mount.
Oh,
but
and then
sooner or later,
it would
come back down.
Gotcha.
So it wouldn't be a clunk immediately.
Sure.
And so you hit the gas and there's a clunk.
Kind of a delayed clunk.
Yeah, it would be a delayed clunk.
Okay.
All righty, Mark, you stay there because I got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or car problem, we're going to kind of talk about your make and model, how many miles you've got, and then describe the symptoms to me, because that's the best interchange we can talk about. The benefit that we just talked with Michael about his slow cold start was is he had had a new battery installed, and that didn't help it. So that kind of gives me some good information. At least I'm going to eliminate the battery to some extent. But, Mark, we talked about your clunk and your transmission. I also want you to check the fluid in the transmission, and if you pull the dipstick, it'll tell you exactly how to check it. It'll say hot in park, or it'll say cold, engine off, or whatever. But the information on how to properly check the transmission fluid is right there on the dipstick, okay?
Okay.
And as far as the clunk is concerned, what part of town do you live in, number one? And number two, do you have a garage you trust?
I am East Mesa, and no, I don't have a garage.
Okay. You're welcome to take it by Thompson's Auto Repair. That's on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. I wouldn't take it in on Monday morning or Friday afternoon because those are really busy times for us. But I would say to him, do you have a technician that I could take a ride with? I would like to demonstrate the clunk. I'm capable of doing that, and I promise not to have him for more than 15 minutes. And that would be an acceptable request from the front counter. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark. All righty. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in the Valley since 1968. Phil has been in the Valley since 1840. And Phil has been around transmissions his whole life. And he's not a gray-haired guy, but he's a guy that knows transmissions. So he's at 40th Street in Washington. He's on the north side of the road. So if you have a transmission problem, you're welcome to stop by. If you're in Phoenix, you're welcome to stop by. The issue is you can stop by, and if you can duplicate the problem, it's more than likely that Phil's going to put somebody with you, or he'll go with you himself, if you can duplicate the problem. But Phil tells me a story a long time ago where a guy had a problem, and he only had the problem when his boat was on behind his van. He took Phil from 40th Street in Washington to Canyon Lake.
That's Phil's fault for not saying something sooner.
Oh, that's exactly what I told him. I said,
like 5 miles away or 10 miles away and be like, all right, let's head back to the shop.
Yeah, I said, didn't you have a phone? Couldn't you call 911 and say I've been kidnapped or something?
Maybe he wanted to go to Canyon Lake and maybe they just spent the day out on the lake.
I want to tell you something. Phil's never been on a set of water skis. I can tell you that much. But anyway, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Talk to Phil, 40th Street in Washington. He's a good guy. Anyway, symptoms are important because that's the exchange. That's how you have to understand. Symptoms are so important. You're going to save money. A guy comes in, and let's just pretend this. A guy comes in and he says that the air conditioning only blows through his top vents, and he says no matter how I do the controls, it'll only blow through the defrost vents up on top of the dash. He can spend the next 4 years of my life telling me all he's done, and I don't care.
Yeah.
I know that there's a blend door problem. Mm-hmm. I know we're going to have to go in and find out if there's a Taco Bell wrapper stuck in the blend door that fell through the dash. I know that. We're going to have to do that. But if he can demonstrate it, it's even better. Or he says, when I throttle up hard on my old Ford van, the air conditioning stops blowing out of the center vents. And it doesn't. I don't know where it blows. And I'm going to say to him, I want you to stick your hand up on the vent by the windshield, the bottom of the windshield, and let me know if the air's there.
Yeah. So vacuum line or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you're looking for.
Or people will come in and say, I want my brakes checked, and they won't elaborate, you know, on anything. And then you check the pads, and they're fine. Test drive it, and, you know, around the block, it's fine. And then they come to pick it up, and they're like, you know, there's this vibration when I brake at highway speeds. It's like, well, that would have been helpful at the front end, you know, because not our guys don't always. I mean, if we've been told that it's a highway issue or 75 miles an hour, we're not driving the streets that speed, but
we're close to the freeway.
Yeah, but we'll take it on the freeway
right.
If that's when the problem happens. But all those little things are important to know. You know, when dropping it off or getting your vehicle serviced or anything like that.
And when we talk about this kind of vibration, a high-speed brake application vibration, we're talking about the rotor of the disc brakes is wobbling.
Uh-huh.
And when we wobble the rotor, the issue has to be that this rotor could be wobbling about the thickness of four human hairs.
Sure.
So that would be 8 thousandths or 10 thousandths of an inch. So as that rotor wobbles at 75 miles an hour, your brake pedal pulsates.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we need to know.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of checking your brakes. It's a matter of give us the symptoms exactly. Tell us how to duplicate the symptoms.
Sure.
And on that Ford that I was talking about with the vacuum line, you're right. It's going to be a vacuum line, but it could be one of three things. It could be end A. It could be end B.
Sure.
It could be underneath the dash where A goes to C, or it could be this big old grapefruit-looking pod that has a hole in it. So it's not as easy as just to plug the vacuum line on it, although sometimes that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's kind of like, well, has anybody been underneath the hood? Yeah, I was doing a tune-up the other day. And so, okay, well, open up the hood, and we're going to go right to where that vacuum like is. It's been knocked off or it's been broken.
Yeah.
And cut it, put it back on, and say,
sure.
If you're a customer and been around a long time, it's no charge.
Yeah.
If you're a first-time customer, we would have written a work order on you at the beginning.
Sure.
All right, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, I'm going to be right with you in just a second, but I want to talk about S&S Tire and Auto Service. Folks, everybody that advertises on this show has been personally vetted by me. I've known these people for years and years, and include decades. When you start talking about S&S Tire on the west side, they're in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have a very huge and very comprehensive line of tires, many different brands of tires in the same size. So you can go in and you can say, I'd like your good, better, best out the door. Write my check before I leave home for four tires. That's an important consideration. So they have the ability to give you three different sizes or three different pricing for three different brands of the same size. And that way you can decide what's best for you. They also balance your tires. They do alignment, suspension work, and they do oil changes and all kinds of maintenance. So if you're looking for new tires or anything else you want to do, S&S Tire has three valley locations. It'd be a good place to start. We'll be back right after this. It's really important that we talk to people with one-syllable names. 602-315-43.
No.
Okay. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I might as well get my home address
or sure.
my home phone
Seriously.
Number there. All righty. 602-508-0960. And, Mike, you're up first. How can I help you?
How you doing, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, I have a Ford diesel truck. It's a 7.3 liter. It's got 315,000 miles on it. In the morning, when it's cold, I get a check engine light. It comes on for about 10 seconds and then turns off. And then the truck starts idling a little bit faster.
Okay. We're going to have to go in and look at the codes and the serial stream data. The serial stream data is a live look at everything, so we can push buttons on our scanners, and we can go into fuel delivery, we can go into the electrical system, we can go do a lot of things. The fact that the engine light came on, it left the trace in your computer, so we can go in and look at historical data or live data or whatever. I want to tell you that just because it has a code for some part does not mean that code is the problem. The other day I had a guy call me and tell me he had four oxygen sensor codes on his car. Now, all of them were lean. Okay, so they're all screaming. They're saying to the computer, give me more fuel. So he went to the three-whiskered kid at the parts store, and he wanted to sell him $400, $500, $600 worth of oxygen sensors for four. There's a pre- and a post-catalytic converter. So we have upstream cat number one and downstream cat number one. Then we have an upstream cat number two, so forth. And I said to him, I think the faucet's problem is the faucet. The computer's supposed to open the faucet when it sees, hey, give me more fuel. Maybe the fuel filter's plugged. Maybe your fuel pressure isn't up to snuff. Or the adverse, maybe you have a huge vacuum leak. Does the motor idle rough when you hit the brakes? Now, this doesn't apply to your diesel. So in your particular situation, I got good news. The good news is the fact that it comes on and then goes off is good news. The bad news is you're going to have to spend some money to find out what it is. Now, what part of town do you live in?
Well, I'm in North Phoenix, and I got recommended a place, Phoenix Transmission and Engine, Deep Creek and Bell.
I don't know them.
Do you know them?
No, I don't.
You know what Dennett's up there?
No, no, but okay. I would probably send you over to Strictly Diesel up there at Deer Valley and I-17.
Okay, that was the other one I was looking at.
Okay, I would talk to Nate at Strictly Diesel. Nate is about 10 feet tall, and his hands look like tennis rackets. And he has
and
a
all
very,
of that is important for diesel repair.
No, it's important because he is the kind of guy you hope your daughter brings home. Okay, he's got a firm handshake. He's honest as the day is long.
Sure.
He's married, so forget about the daughter part.
Yeah,
but Nate's a guy that you'll remember for the rest of your life, and you'll have nightmares of him grabbing a hold of your head and bouncing it like a basketball. But no, he doesn't do that. But Strictly Diesel is the one I would go to.
Strictly Diesel. Okay, what is a diagnostic fee for this? What would it run, Mark?
75 to 125, but that question is better to him. When you walk in, you say, do you say this? In the morning when I start it up, I've got a check engine light for about 5 seconds to 15 seconds, then it goes out. Would you please explain to me what the diagnostic procedure would be, and would you also put a range to it? That's an important word, range. Now, Nate may disagree with me, and he may, $35 to $50. Or he says, I already did a 7.3. I've done a lot of 7.3s for this same problem, so I may not even charge you anything. Or he may say, no, I'm going to open that window even higher. I want 50 to 100 because he knows this is going to be a long one. So that's what experience brings to the table, but I would talk to Nate.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's go to Wes. Wes, how are you today? What can we do for you?
Hi, Mark. Just fine. Enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I have a 2011 Escape, Ford Escape. The brakes work fine in town pretty much. Anytime I have to put them on hard, it throws my front end back and forth. And I've had it in, they've replaced brakes and all kinds of stuff, and it never goes away. And it's really bad on the freeway if I have to brake hard. It throws me to the right, and I have to steer it back to the left, and there's something serious.
Okay. All right. Well, I think it let's work on the description part. When you apply the brakes hard, the steering wheel moves right and you have to correct left, and then it moves left and you have to correct right. So you're struggling to keep the car on a straight line because it wants to pull real hard left and real hard right, and it does that one right after the other.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It certainly does it to the right, and I'm grabbing the wheel and having to straighten it back out, and I kind of go back and forth once.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't...
Would it make a difference if it's just one way as opposed to both ways?
At the caliper.
Yeah,
that's exactly
because if
what
it's
I'm
pulling,
thinking.
If it's you're braking hard and it's pulling right, then maybe something on that...
On that caliper.
Yeah, on the right front, you know, passenger front. But if it's pulling both ways, then that's... Something got to be something else, right?
It's got to be something in the suspension or steering that's leaking, that's loose.
Yeah.
So if you have rack mounts that are loose that holds your rack and pinion in a specific spot and doesn't let it move, and there's these big rubber clamps that hold it there, if those rubber clamps have been saturated by oil, then when you hit the brake, that rack moves, and you're compensating for it. The brakes are what causes the problem, but the brakes are not the fix. Now, it's unfortunate that your shop that's tried all of these different things, it's unfortunate that they didn't send their senior guy and say to you, Wes, take him and show him what you're talking about. Or, Wes, can you make this happen? And Wes says, yeah, all I need is a little freeway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hit the 51 and go north. Take my A1 tech over here and take him for a ride. Now, we're not going to send the guy to you that hasn't brushed his teeth in 4 weeks. We're not going to send the guy to you that smokes cigarettes. We're not going to send the guy to you that has grease up to his elbows. We're going to send a good guy with you. Now, I make fun of guys like that, but really some of the very best guys look that way every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I look that way myself sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that I'm making fun of, but we're not going to have somebody go in your brand new Escalade that looks like they just rolled around in a bunch of grease.
Mm-hmm.
But in your particular case, I am quite sure that you have something loose in the steering or the suspension because both of them, it could be lower control arm bushings, it could be strut rod bushings, it could be something with a tie rod end that's really, really loose, causing it to pull left and right, left and right. And the way you describe it is that it will intermittently pull left and right, and I'm a second behind it. It pulls left, so I'm going to steer right. Then it pulls right, and then I'm going to steer left. So I'm kind of following the pull with my steering wheel. And more than anything else, though, take them for a ride. If they're not willing to go for a ride with you, I'd probably go to the next shop.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to change shops because they did have their ace technician, they claimed, took the car out, took it on the freeway, and did things that, oh, yeah, I'll get this fixed. It's been twice now, and it hasn't been fixed.
Yeah.
Okay, but let me ask you this important question. Has he changed it any?
I got a slightly better this second time, but it's still doing it.
Okay. Did you take him for a ride, or did he go by himself?
He went by himself.
Okay.
Yeah, go with him.
Yeah.
You and in a lot of times in these kind of cases, we'll have you drive the vehicle and duplicate it, and then if we see how you drive it and you get it to happen, and then we drive it and get it to happen for us behind the steering wheel.
Yeah.
But definitely go with him.
You have to teach us how to make it happen so we can duplicate it for two reasons. Number one, we want to drive it and feel it. And number two, after we fix it, we want to go drive it and make sure it's gone.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah.
That's what part of town do you live in?
Southeast Valley, Gilbert.
Okay. Well, I would send you over to Thompson's. I'm quite sure Brian and his crew over to Thompson's could find it. I'm quite sure that they'll take a ride with you and stuff like that. Obviously, for the obvious reasons, Monday morning, Friday afternoons are no go. But any time during the day, that'd be fine. So I'd stop by there if you're looking for a referral. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Wes. 602-508-0960. 602.
Dale is next caller, Dale.
602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto Repairs at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And let me tell you why I'm so high on these guys. First of all, Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Auto. Here's the deal. I send a guy over that's got a car that nobody else can fix, and it has a constant coil problem, the ignition coils on the engine. So Bob goes in and does some checking, him and his son. And they put a couple coils on it, and then it comes back with bad coils. They don't abandon the customer. They said, we made a mistake. So they track down a bad ground wire. Now, this is kind of level 5 of a total of level 6s. So the first time they went to level 3, and they thought they had it. But when he comes back, the customer tells me, they put 2 new coils in it. They fixed the bad ground. It's been weeks. Everything is fine. And they didn't charge me a dime for the second visit. So actually, he got some more free diagnosis. Plus, they warrantied his coils. And they put him back the way they found him. So that's why Bob is such a good guy. And actually, he's a good guy because his wife, Ellen, can beat him up. But Bob and Ellen at Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue Indian School, they've been around since 1967, so he's a great diagnostician. But they do oil changes and all that other stuff as well. Is it Dale?
Yeah, yep, Dale.
Dale, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have an air conditioning problem.
Okay.
I have a 2004 Chevrolet diesel. And as I'm driving down the road with air conditioning on, it could be any time, the air will go out on the driver's side, but it will still keep blowing on the passenger side. I stop, restart it, and it's blowing in the cab perfectly.
Is it the volume of air goes out, or it stops blowing cold?
Totally. On the driver's side, it stops blowing totally.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. No. No, excuse me. It does blow warm air.
Okay, so you're driving down the road, and it starts blowing warm air, and then it will shut it off, turn it back on, and it will start blowing cold?
Oh, just on the driver's side.
Okay.
The passenger side is not affected at all.
Okay. All right. We're going to use some electronic solenoids to open and close different vents to give you cold or warm air, or cold or hot air, depending on whether you're asking for air conditioning or heater. And so we have to go in there and talk to the computer. We have to say, what are you doing? What do you see? But typically, this is going to be a door underneath the dash. Now, I want you to picture something. I want you to picture the letter Y, okay?
Okay.
So what we have is the vent is where the bottom of the Y hits the line. That's the vent. Up above is hot air on one arm of the Y and cold air is on the other. And in the middle, where the three portions of the letter Y conjoin, is a door. Now, okay, if the door is all the way to the left, shutting off the left side of the Y, you're going to get hot air. If the door swings all the way to the right, you're going to get cold air. And if it's in the middle, you get lukewarm air. We're going to be looking for those kinds of activities under the dash. I'm going to guess the diagnostic is going to be somewhere in the vicinity, 75 plus or minus, 25, maybe a little more.
Yeah, I'd say sometimes it can be more just because it's a little bit more extensive. And
then sometimes we have to open up portions of the dash to see what's going on. And so that counts towards the repair, but the repair, I'm going to be guessing this could be a $300 or $400 repair.
Yeah, I would.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And the
I can stop real quick and turn it on for $300 or $400.
No, you can, but I'm giving you the top end. I'm being careful here. This could easily be a bad connection, or this could be a hinge that's got some dirt in it, or there could be half of a taco that somebody sat on the dash that fell down through the vents.
No tacos in this truck.
All right. But anyway, it's kind of, now you could wait till it gets worse and breaks altogether.
No, don't want that.
Okay. 1 minute. So anyway, those are the choices you got.
And the key cycling on and off is basically just resetting that door. So it's sending a signal to move that door flap is probably why he's then getting cold and then all of a sudden driving and it's going to warm, right?
It's the default.
Yeah.
Okay, so the door defaults in one place. By shutting off the key, we flap the door to the left.
Sure.
It needs to know where the left is at.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you start it up, now the computer says, hey, door, go to the middle. Well, the door loses its balance.
Yeah.
So it swings over to here. Well, the computer thinks it's in the middle at 12 o'clock when really it's at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
So by shutting the key off, we go to default again.
Yeah.
And so you're defaulting the system.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I live in Prescott, Arizona. Who would you suggest?
I'd take it to Tom at Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley and tell him Mark Salem said there's not a prayer in hell that he's going to be able to fix this. That's what I'd do.
But I live in Prescott. That's a long way from me, though.
You know, I don't have anybody in Prescott. Trust me when I tell you, I have tried, but unfortunately, they don't mass the muster. We'll be back right after this. Everybody, hey, it's 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'm going to go to Gabriel because he's waited over the break. Gabriel, you're first. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2001 Ford Focus that driving on the around 65 or probably less, completely shut off. And comes back on, and it's kind of scary because kind of completely stops and then keeps going.
Okay, when it stops, does it chug to a stop, or is it like somebody shuts a light switch off?
Kind of a shock.
Okay, all right. And when it comes back on, does it chug and then goes faster? Is there a gradual coming back on, or is this like a light switch turns off and a light switch turns on?
The latter.
Okay, okay. It's not fuel then. We're going to eliminate fuel, so because there's only two reasons for it to die, and that's spark and fuel. And so I think you have a spark problem, and you don't have points and condenser, so that would be probably a crankshaft sensor or a camshaft sensor, depending on what ignition system you have. That's going to be a tough one, especially when it's intermittent and it doesn't happen all the time. They may say to you to, let's put a crank sensor on it and let's see how we do. Because the crank sensor talks to the ignition module. The ignition module talks to the coils. The coils talk to the spark plugs and the spark plugs keep going. So we have this chain. But the crankshaft sensor is probably the most common problem for this. But I wouldn't suggest that you make that decision yourself.
How often is it happening?
Well, it's probably twice a week, something like that. Sometimes more often.
And no check engine lights or anything like that come on even.
Yes. No, the lights go off completely and then comes back on.
Okay, I want you to do a couple things for me. I want you to make sure to eliminate fuel. Let's keep the tank on the top end of the tank. So I want you to keep it between 3/4 and full all the time. Okay.
Okay.
Number two, I want you to wiggle the key when this happens, you know, because you're driving down the road and the engine dies. So I want you to reach up, and I just want you to wiggle the key left and right, the ignition key left and right. I want you to take your fist and hit the top of the steering column, okay? Now, if you say, Mark, when I do that, it comes back to life, then we have a bad connection at the ignition switch, or we have a bad ignition switch. So I want you to play the key. Now, before, you're driving down the road, the car dies. So you put it into neutral, and you start it up, right?
No. It does by itself.
Yeah. Okay. So he's just driving and everything shuts down, okay. And then it will just start back up.
Now, when it shuts down, does the dash light up or not?
No, it's not.
The dash lights just completely shut down, right? There's nothing. Yes. Does the tach and everything just go to zero?
Yes.
That's got to be an ignition switch.
And then he doesn't do anything, and it just comes back up, and it's driving normal, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like you're driving down the road, and there's somebody turns off the light switch to the motor, and the car goes, and nothing happens, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's like somebody turned the switch back up, and you're just on your way again. You didn't have to put it in neutral. You didn't have to hit the key. You didn't have to do anything.
That is correct.
Okay. I would be looking at the ignition switch on that one because that's about the only thing that can have that happen. I'm listening for keys like the car has to go through a startup cycle. So I'm looking that the dashboard lights go out and come back on. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for all that kind of stuff. And then I'm also looking for the chugging part. The chugging part of, you know, chug,
like
and then fire. You were going to say something, Gabriel?
Yes. I replaced the switch by one of those cheap things from AutoZone, and I took it to the dealer to replace them, and they did that. One of the keys is not working now, and I don't know if that the ignition will have to do with that.
I don't think so. Sometimes we do say to the customer, switch keys, and that helps in the diagnostic process. Otherwise, grab your wife's key because she never drives it, and her key's brand new.
Yeah, sometimes if they get too worn down, we'll see that, and then if we try a different, more fresh-cut key, then the
it'll fix things.
Fix the issue.
Another thing is how many keys are on your key ring?
Two.
Okay, so it's not real heavy. You don't have 40 keys on your key ring, right?
No. Okay. Only an extra one in my house key.
Sure.
All right. Well, I think while you're driving down the road, let's not wait for it to happen. When you're driving down the road, I want you to just kind of hit the top of the steering column right in front of the steering wheel. I want you to hit that. I want you to hit the bottom of it. I want you to wiggle the key. I want to see if you can make it happen. If you can make it happen and you can show someone how to make it happen, then you've just saved yourself probably $75 worth of diagnostic money.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All righty. Do you have a shop that you go to?
No. Can you recommend one?
Okay. What part of town are you in?
I live by Sound City in Youngtown.
Okay. I'd probably go to Thunderbird Auto at 88th Avenue in Thunderbird.
Thunderbird Auto.
Yeah, 88th Avenue and Thunderbird. It's 88th Avenue and Thunderbird Street, but it's called Thunderbird Auto. And just tell them the guy on the radio said there's no way you guys can fix this, and that'll throw the gauntlet down. And it's like waving the red flag in front of the bull. So you just say, yeah, that guy on the radio says you can't fix this.
Okay.
All righty.
I will do that.
All righty, Gabriel. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so when it comes to billing and stuff, and when it comes to symptoms and the stuff we've been talking about, mm-hmm. Do you have any idea how often I'm right and wrong?
Oh, no, I don't. I mean, I don't have any concrete evidence.
No, that's true. But people do call and say, you know, this is what it was. And there's times I miss it flat out. But here's the key on how good I am. It's how good they can describe it. Women will sit there and talk with you for an hour, and you can ask them questions. And women understand that there's three answers. Yes, no, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
With some men, you can't even get 20 questions in an hour because they want to fill in all the blanks, and they want to tell you about in 1952 this happened.
Mm-hmm.
But the give and take, and then being able to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's an important part of this diagnostic process.
When you're sorry. I don't know. I'm wrong.
Those are words that come out of my mouth. Those are words that come out of my mouth. I say that to your mother just to make her happy. Yeah. It calms the fight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're only learning that now.
Yeah, you're right.
You should have learned that 45 years ago.
You're right. You're right. There's no question about that. And all guys will learn that soon enough.
Yeah.
Especially married guys that are going to learn that soon enough. But the whole idea is it's a give and take. I little old ladies, I mean to tell you, they are so observant and they are so in tune with their car. And it's because it's their sole transportation. Many of them are widows or many of them are single. Mm-hmm. And that car is an important part of their life. So they're really in tune. And when you give them something to do, sometimes I'll give them two things to do and say, call me back or email me back. We've had just the other day, a guy called me and said, he asked me about a particular kind of oil, and this oil is kind of a multi-level marketing oil. So there are people out there in the world of makeup. There's people out there that sell a specific kind of makeup.
Sure.
And they sell to a bunch of other ladies who sell to a bunch of other ladies. Well, there's an oil out there that has that same thing. And so he called and he says, my brother-in-law from South Dakota says this is the only oil I should use in my car. And my response to him was, I'm very familiar with that. As a matter of fact, one of my employees is part of that multi-level marketing of this oil. But it's my opinion that you can use Chevron Delo, Chevron Havoline, Valvoline. You can use all the major brand oils at Shell Rotella. You can use any of those, and you're going to be just fine. How much is that oil in a synthetic? And he goes, $12 a quart. And I said, I would love to sell you oil at $12 a quart. Because I pay $9 a quart for it, so I would love to sell you at $12. I'm paying $9, and I charge $10.15 or something like that. Because you know, oil's not a profit center. You have to compete with Walmart and all the rest of
them. Next caller, Glenn.
So there's that kind of give and take, but it has to do with that. Glenn, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2010 Tundra, 62,000 miles. And I'm inspecting my throttle body and the butterfly for carbon.
Okay.
I discovered a ring both on the backside of the butterfly and around where the butterfly closes.
Yep.
And I'm looking for a good way to remove that.
Okay. I just want to tell you, you cannot spray carb clean in there. Because if you spray carb clean in there, there's a good chance that you're going to get liquid into one of the cylinders, and you know that we cannot compress liquid, so you're going to bend rods, and you're going to destroy the motor. So you can't do that. So the first thing you do is put the key in your pocket so your wife can't start it up when you're inside the engine compartment. You're going to open up the hood and get access to the throttle blades, and I want you to put a brick on the accelerator with your key in the pocket. I want the butterflies open. I want you to take a long screwdriver or a long dowel or something long, I mean a coat hanger tripled over, and then I want you to wrap a shop towel around the end of it, tie it up real tight with a plastic tie or some baling wire, and I want you to spray carb cleaner all over the rag, and then you're going to go in there and polish the bottom of each bore and then the top of each bore. Does that make sense?
Yes, I did put the carb cleaner on a rag, and it's very, very stubborn to come off.
It's going to be. Now, the default could be this. If you wanted to roll the dice, then you would take two or three rags, and you'd tie them to the end, and you'd hook the coat hanger around the three or four rags. Then you'd shove them past the throttle blades, and basically you're clogging up the intake behind the throttle blades. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Then you go ahead and spray and let it sit. I don't want you scraping on it with anything other than a soft bristle brush like a toothbrush. Hey, your wife probably needs a new toothbrush. Go get
her. I knew where this was going. This is part of the disclaimer at the beginning of the show. Don't take this advice.
Get your wife's toothbrush and do that spraying on there. But you're just going to have to work on it. And I use Berryman's Chem Tool is my favorite. And so that's a red and white and blue can, but it's predominantly white with a little bit of red and some blue. But Berryman's Chem Tools. And there's not, now, when you put it back, the rags back behind there, they're going to soak up this carburetor cleaner, so that at the end you're going to pull this coat hanger that's got all these rags tied to it. At that point, the throttle is still wide open. The carb cleaner will evaporate after time. You're going to walk away from this car for 30 minutes with the throttle stuck to the floor. I want to air that out. I don't want you to crank that over, because I want to make sure we don't have any liquid down in those cylinders.
Got it. I have a question.
Okay.
My throttle body is fly-by-wire, and I've been just manually opening the butterfly. Is that going to harm anything?
Not as long as the key's off.
So if I want to get it to go wide open, can I turn the key on and then put a brick on the pedal? Or will that not open the butterfly because it's not running?
No, it'll open the butterfly. Just the key. Oh, well, you know, you asked me a good question, and I don't know the answer to that.
You just said, I don't know.
Let me make that real clear. I don't know. You know, I've never been asked that before, and I've never had the opportunity to do that. So the answer is get your wife involved, and you hop in the car, turn the key on, and push your foot all the way to the floor and ask her if the throttle blades go horizontal on her.
Well, she left me because I used her toothbrush for all my cleaning projects.
Well, you know what? Andy will give you hers. Andy will give you hers. You're going to need somebody. Well, another thing you could do is you could duct tape a mirror in front of there, so from inside the car you could look through the crack of the hood and look to see if the butterflies are wide open. Go get the neighborhood kid and give him a buck to help you.
Okay.
So. And you know what? I'd like you to email me at mark@marksalem.com and just tell me, key on, throttle pedal to the floor, what did the butterflies do?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking there'd be no reason why they wouldn't go to wide open, because it doesn't see the engine on. So it would be no harm, no foul to rotate the butterflies to a vertical or a horizontal position as opposed to the normal vertical position.
Yeah, that's so. The pain. What's it called? Berryman's
Chem Tool. C-E-C-H-E-M Tool. That's the one I like. And I want to tell you something. When you get that in your eyes, you're going to find out what a tough guy you are, because that burns like there's any cuts on your hands. So protect yourself appropriately. It's not going to eat up your paint, but I don't want you to spray it on your paint. And I'm not trying to create the perception that this stuff's going to eat your eyes out. That's not true. But it is very caustic. Okay?
Appreciate it. Thank
you. All right. Thank you. Strictly Diesel, we've talked about this last hour, is I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. Strictly Diesel Repairs, a Better Business Bureau rated shop, A1 rated shop, A+ rated shop. They have really good technicians. They focus on diesels, and they are diehard diesel service, repair, and a parts place. They have skills on both foreign, domestic, light trucks, diesel light trucks. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, they have a parts department that's on 24 hours a day on their website. So if you're looking for kind of diesel parts and you want to compare maybe prices and stuff like that, you can go to Strictly Diesel's website and you can look at the parts that they sell for diesels, like air filters, cold air kits, and stuff like that. So they've been on my best car repair shops list for many years, and Nate's a good guy. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. The lines are wide open if you have a car question or car problem. We've got another 40 minutes left in the show, so Gil's sitting there, and I could hear him snoring, so I know that there's nobody on the phone, but 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Everything about our show is on my website, marksalem.com. We have our list of best car repair shops, so you click the word best. We have a lot of our radio shows on there, sans the commercials. So you can go in there and listen to a two-hour show in an hour and 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back and look at a show that I said something and you wrote down the date, the 17th of March, and when it hits the website, then you can go to that show and listen to it again. You can also leave emails there. But if you're going to leave me an email, whether you use mark@marksalem.com or you go to the website and click that you're going to leave an email, if you give me a phone number, people just don't believe I'm going to call them back.
Mm-hmm.
I called a guy back yesterday, and he goes, "I just can't believe you called me. I don't want to type for the rest of my life."
Yeah, I always tell people, leave your number because he'll call you.
Yeah, and the give and take, I ask him 10 questions, and then 2 days later they answer me back, but they don't answer all the questions, or they go off on it. Yeah, so it's just so much easier for me to call, and I call from a blocked number, so this is it. You say hello.
Hello.
This is Mark Salem. You emailed me about a car question, so if you have time right now, we can discuss it, but if you can't, I can call back. Mm-hmm. So I jump right into my name, so they know that I'm not selling them a vacation in Jamaica.
Those calls drive me nuts.
You know how I'm handling those calls?
Blocking them.
No, I do that on my cell phone.
You answer and say, all right, Pima County Sheriff.
That's okay. All right, you ready? All right, you be the girl. And it goes, ring, go ahead.
Hello.
I say hello. Yeah, you're the lady. I'm the guy.
I'm selling the Marriott trip.
Yes. Don't say that.
Oh, sorry.
But you are a winner, okay? So I say to them, I let them talk for just a few minutes, and I go, this is the Pima County Sheriff's Office, back counter of the jail. You cannot talk to an inmate unless you have a number and permission from their lawyers. Do not call here again. And that works great. That works great. They're now, crazy. It doesn't work when you talk and the girl keeps talking over you.
Yeah, when it's automated.
It's an automated one, and she keeps talking. Oh, well, you know, you won this trip and blah, 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 blah. And she's just talking, and I'm going, I'm going to rip her heart out over this phone, and she just keeps talking. But if you wait long enough, you don't have to answer. She said, would you like to hear more information? And I go, no, but I use bad words. No.
Yeah.
And she keeps talking as if I said yes. So pretty soon someone's going to be coming on the air. Air coming on the phone, and I'll wait for that someone, and then I'll tell them, this is the sheriff's count. You may think you're calling from a bad number, but we can track you. You better remove this. And I had one lady go, sir, I will, but it's going to take us almost a week to get you out of our queue. And I said, that's fine. I'll wait a week, but I know where you're at.
Hey, do you know what a pediddle is?
Yeah, it's one of your girlfriends that I that I didn't like when you were in high school.
No, I'm serious. Do you know what a pediddle is?
No, I don't.
You never heard that?
I've never heard pediddle.
We had a customer come in and said that she was a pediddle or her car was a pediddle or something like that.
Yeah.
And so we were all like, what does that mean? So we went around and asked, and I think only one person knew what a pediddle was.
Who was it, first?
Scott.
Oh.
And it's if somebody has a headlight out, they're a pediddle.
I still don't get it.
I don't know. It's just some thing. People call him a pediddle. And so Eddie did a pediddlectomy. It was Colleen's car. She always says she's a pediddle again. Another headlight went out, a different one, her other one. I just want to know if you ever heard that.
I'm a little bit more worried in the global picture. Colleen is our CPA.
Yeah.
And so she's talking in code words to her client. I want you to fire her on Monday and get a new pediddle CPA. Oh, a pediddle. So did Eddie write it up on the work order as a pediddle? What'd you say?
A pediddlectomy is what Eddie said he did.
Okay. And so did he write it up that way?
I don't remember.
I don't think anybody could spell that. A pediddlectomy. Eddie, by the way, folks, is a technician that's worked for us for 29 years, almost 30 years.
And, 29 years next week.
And I'm going to tell you a real quick story about Eddie. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Okay, hold on. What?
A pediddle. Alternatively spelled pediddle or perdiddle, also known as Popeye, due to looking like one eye is out or squinting. It's an American and Canadian slang term for a vehicle with a burnt-out headlight or brake light.
A pediddle.
And it's a game involving tallying up sightings of vehicles. This is useful information, people. Just go to your garage and say, I've got a pediddle that I need fixed, and see what they say.
Oh, God. Well, they came. How many people we have here? 30? And so you had to walk around, and one out of 30 knew what a pediddle was? I wouldn't do that to too many gray-haired guys that are standing in front of the counter, because they'll just escort you out the front door and say, you need to go to the European shop. That's what happened. Okay, Gil, who was it?
Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a 2005 Honda Pilot, and I've been told that I need transmission mounts and motor mounts.
Okay, all right.
And I've been quoted...
Wait a minute. You've been quoted $1,000 to
$1,300. $2,300.
Oh, boy, they really loved you. Yeah. All right. I have some questions I want to ask you, but I'm up against a break. But this is what I want you to think about. Okay? I want you to think about the smoothness of the drive. So from 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, does the car feel smooth or is there an unusual vibration?
No, it feels smooth.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Hold on. And then I want you to answer this question. Is there any kind of vibration or shake of the car when the car is sitting at a traffic light, in drive?
No.
Okay. So hang on right there because I want to talk to you on the other side of the break, and I'm going to teach you some self-defense for car expense. Okay? And I know you're going to be capable of pulling this off because older ladies can pull this off, and with their steely eyes, they look at the shop owner or the technician in front of them, and he's scared. And I'm going to teach you how to do that when we come back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the top of the hour. I'm going to go to Michelle, but the lines are open. We got four more open, 602-508-0960. Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And I misspoke. It's a 2011 Honda Pilot. Oh. I think I said 2005, but it's 2011.
Okay.
I have almost 88,000 miles on it.
Okay. I don't want to know the name of the shop, but this is what I want to arm you with.
Okay.
This works really well. Trust me on this. You say, you know, I don't really know a lot about cars, but my son is an engineer for Honda, and he's out of Atlanta, Georgia. And he always wants me to talk to him about whatever I may need or anything like that. So would you explain what symptoms I'm likely to have with all four of my motor mounts being bad? Now, you have just scared the living hell out of the person in front of you. Because there's no way if the chances of you needing four motor mounts for $2,300 at 88,000 miles are pretty doggone slim.
Right. And I think he said that two were bad, but you might as well have all four done.
If two are broken, if there's overlap of labor and savings of labor to do them all, that's one thing. Is the labor savings $60 versus the thousands it's going to cost to replace it? That's silly. So, I mean, I would say how much is it to replace just the two that are broken?
Okay, but here's the deal. The ones that are broken of the four are going to be the ones that get the most use.
Sure.
Okay, so when you're sitting in your car tomorrow morning, this is what I want you to do. I want you to start your car and close your eyes and set your parking brake. I want the car to be running. I want you to push the brake pedal, and I want you to feel it in park. I just want you to kind of close your eyes and zen out and just think about how the car feels. Then I want you to take your shifter and put it into reverse, and I want to feel the car, and then neutral, and then drive, okay? If there is no difference.
Do not spend the money.
Would you let me finish? If there is no difference in the feel of the car as you zen into the car and you become one with the car with your seatbelt on and your hands are on your left hand's on the steering wheel and your right hand's on the shifter, you're feeling the vibration at the steering wheel, you're feeling the vibration at the shifter and park and then reverse and then neutral, then drive, nothing changes, then I can tell you for sure you don't need mounts.
Okay.
Now, I want to tell you something more. It is true that that's an easy way to sell things, but let me ask you a question. If I was going to go in and I was your doctor and I'd say, you know, you need a new knee, okay? But why don't you let me do your other knee and both hips while I'm there? What would you say to him?
No.
I would slap the dog crap right out of him. Okay? And then and when you say that your son is an engineer for Honda, and he makes me buy Hondas all the time, and he always wants to look at the old parts, so, you know, and can you write down exactly what's wrong? And just write it on the work order there, and then I'd like you to just write your name and put your phone number, because he's probably going to want to talk to you. That ain't going to happen, Michelle. That's not going to happen. When this bandido is standing in front of you, and you start saying, write it down and sign your name and put your phone number there so my son from Honda can call, it ain't going to happen. I have told ladies, I don't know how many times, to get them to write down what's wrong with the car and sign their name and print their name and then put their phone number down, and they won't do it. They won't do it if they're ripping you off. So, and let me tell you something else. Here's the second question. Mark, this is from Michelle. Mark, what's going to happen if the motor mounts really go bad? And I'm going to say, nothing. The car will vibrate. Am I going to break
down?
You're
going to actually get symptoms.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to get some vibration. But am I going to break down? No. Have you ever heard of anybody breaking down because of a motor mount? No. Have you ever seen a car towed? How many years have you been in business, Mark? 39. Have you ever seen a car towed in with a broken motor mount? No.
No.
So let me tell you what's going on just between you and me, okay? They're making cars so much better now that the maintenance intervals have been stretched out big. What we used to do three times in 100,000 miles, now we just do once. So we've got all of these mega businesses with millions and millions of inventory and millions of dollars on their 5 acres and all this other stuff. We've got people that are starving to death. And so because they're starving, they're told, up the game, sell. So we're looking at the odometers, and we're going, oh, Michelle, probably I can sell her some motor mounts at 88,000 miles. So you just say, what symptoms do you have? Tell me what symptoms you're going to fix of mine. And I guarantee you that if they can tell the truth, they're going to show you, but they'll go, well, you know, you just need motor mounts. I talked to the technician, and he said you needed motor mounts. That's not good enough. This upsets me about my industry because this is exactly how they take advantage of people. But you're going to learn two things. Number one, what symptoms do I have right now that you're going to fix? And number two, write down exactly, on the back of your business card is fine, write down exactly what your estimate entails, four motor mounts, replacement of four motor mounts, $2,300. Sign your name, print it, and put your phone number on there so my son can call you from Atlanta, Georgia. And that's that's how, and I'll tell you, you can use that at my shop too. I don't care.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, all righty. Good luck to you, Michelle.
Sounds great.
All righty. Don't worry about that. That's motor mounts are not going to break you down in 88,000 miles. And
any time on that kind of a big repair, I mean, she doesn't have any symptoms, so it's not something I would be concerned about. But on big repairs like that, it's always good to get a second opinion or have somebody else look at it.
We know lots of good shops.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to bet that most of them would say, if she took her car into there, I know for us and 100 other shops that are friends of mine that I trust, you walk in and say, I've told her I need all four motor mounts. They're going to take it back in the back. They're going to put it up in the rack. They're going to have their seasoned guy look it over. Then they're going to take Michelle out into the shop and say, look at them. They're all okay.
Yeah.
Now, let me show you, Michelle, what it doesn't look bad. So they put him in the car and they say, okay, now go park, reverse, neutral drive. There is no vibration. Now, with a floor jack, I'm going to lift the motor on the passenger side and rock it, or the driver's side and rock it to the passenger side. I'm going to change the vibration. There'll be one now.
Sure.
So I'm going to say, this is what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, oh, okay, I feel that. Yeah, so goodbye.
Yeah.
And so those are the kinds of things. It's self-defense for car expense. This is what we need. All righty, 602-508-0960. If you have a comment, give us a call. If you have a car problem, give us a call. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. It comes down to good shops. If I've left you with the impression that I'm the only good shop in town, I've done a disservice to you because I'm not. Let me give you a couple of examples of shops. This is just south of Camelback, okay? Just south of Camelback. I'm going to start on the west side of town and move east. South of Camelback, out in Dysart, on Dysart Road, you've got S&S Tire. Then 38th Avenue and Indian School, you got Larry Harker's Auto. You got Martin's Auto Repair. That's Indian School and 16th Street. You got 25th Street Auto Repair at 28th Street and Indian School. Now, Martin's is run by a guy named Dave Martin, and I used to know his dad, Dennis. So he's a second generation at Martin's Auto Repair. You only have to meet him to know he's a good guy. No different than Billy at 28th Street Auto or 25th Street Auto. Mm-hmm. At 25th Street and Indian School. He's a good guy. He knows right and wrong. Automatic transmission exchange. Phil's been around since, what, 1960, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
40th Street in Washington. He does transmission work. And then we move into Scottsdale and Mesa. We got Bell Auto Service, and they're on 87th Street in McDowell. So they're on basically the 101 McDowell. He's been around since Jesus was a baby. You got Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street in Mesa. And I think they're on the second or third generation of that family. You got Schumann's Auto Clinic. And Mike and I went to high school. And Mike is the best alignment guy I've ever met in my life. And if anybody thinks I'm a good alignment person, he is directly responsible for teaching me everything I know. But he works on Dodges and Chevys and Fords, and he does a lot more than alignments. But Mike at Schumann's Auto is a good guy. I went to high school with him. Then you got Arizona Imports. It's owned by Joel. He does all kinds of imports, BMWs, stuff like that. But he does Chevys and Fords and everything else. And he's a good guy. Joel's a good guy. He knows what he's talking about. He's very, very caring. And you've got those shops that are just south of Camelback, all the way from Goodyear on the west side all the way to Mesa on the east side. And then we've got a whole slew of shops north of Camelback, starting from way up in the northeast, which is Raintree Auto Body and Bridwell Automotive. And then you've got the northwest, where you got Thunderbird Automotive, you got Auto Dynamics, you got S&S Tire, and stuff like that. So there are lots of good shops. Now, right now, we don't have any. We only have one transmission shop up in Phoenix. But we're looking at another one right now, and we already know of them, and we've already watched them, and we think we're probably going to sign them up. But let me also tell you that it's not easy to get on this list. We hold them to a high standard. They have to have the proper insurance. They have to have reviews that, and what we hold them to a review level, okay? 5 is a perfect star, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you go to Google, Yelp, the Better Business Bureau, who else are some of the review places?
I mean, there's so many out there, but those are kind of the bigger ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we're at 4.7, 4.6, something like that. Yeah. It's hard to get a perfect 5-star average rating.
Sure.
But we don't hold anybody to any higher standard than we, and there are people that have a half a star less than we do, and we don't care about that. So we're holding people to a high standard, but we're not holding them to my standard. We're holding them to a window, and we happen to be in the middle of the window. I can't hold them to a standard that I can't attain. So I can't say to them that you have to have a 4.6, because I may not have a 4.6. I have a 4.5.
And the reviews, are just...
Some of the reviews are homemade. Some of the reviews are very nasty on our sites as well.
Yeah.
And so that just kind of goes with the flow. But you'll see that sometimes we have somebody that will beat us up really bad on the internet, but we can't find a work order with their name on it.
Yeah.
And we ask them, give us a work order. We say to them, I'll give you all your money back. Tell me who you are.
Yeah.
Tell me what the work order number is. Look in the upper right-hand corner.
Some of the shops, you know, they're good about if they do get a review that's maybe less than stellar, just working with the customer or figuring out, you know, where they drop the ball or, you know, making it right. So that's important as well.
The follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they won't give you. But if you got a person that has one review and they have this glowing review, the algorithm will usually pick them up and say, that's his brother. That's the shop owner's brother writing that up. It's his first review, and he probably just got a bad review, and he wanted to counteract that. So that happens. But nevertheless, there's lots of good shops in this valley. Let's go to the phones. And who did we have, Gil?
Jim,
good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I just wanted to comment that both of your radio shows are a terrific service to the public, I think. You guys do a great job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
You're very welcome. I have an 02 Cavalier, it's a pretty old car, and it's just like me, pretty old.
Okay.
But I don't drive very much, maybe 3,000 miles a year. It's got 82,000 miles on it, and the temperature gauge is always exactly at the same spot, whether it's hot outside or whether it's cold outside when the engine warms up, it always rides at this exact point. But lately, last few weeks or so, I've noticed that it's jumped up at least 2 more notches, you know, maybe, I don't know, these are 20-degree increments or whatever, but it's riding a couple more notches above where it ever has before, and I'm sort of curious about that.
Okay, let me do this way. Let me draw the temperature gauge to a vertical position, which is halfway. Can we do that? Can we divide the gauge into a halfway point? Then we probably have a quarter, a half, a three-quarter, and then a red. Is that kind of close?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I want to tell you, even before you tell me where the needle was, I want to tell you that car should normally run between half and three quarters. That is perfectly okay. That's perfectly acceptable. And we don't want it to run, on a regular basis, we don't want it to run below the half mark on a regular basis? How close are you to that?
I think it generally, where it has been running, is three-quarter mark.
Okay.
And but that's where it's jumped up from. And
okay.
On the gauge, I realize those gauges aren't you know accurate as far as what it's saying, that, but it's been running just a little over the 195. 195 is one of the marks on the gauge.
Okay.
And the next one after that is 260, where it's going red line.
Okay. All right, fair enough. So in between those, is the needle somewhere in between 195?
Always run just barely over 195, and now it's about midway, almost midway between the 195 and the 260.
Okay, all right. This is how we're going to diagnose this if there's a problem, okay? I don't want to see it split the difference between the 195 in the middle of the gauge and the 260 on the other side. I don't like that. So I think we are running hotter. But what I want to do is...
Let me interrupt. Also, the fan has never come on before, ever. I've had the car for quite a few years. I've never heard the fan run until this particular situation has occurred. Now the fan will run quite often.
Okay. And actually, that takes care of some of what I was thinking about. I wanted you to go on the freeway. I want you to drive around town, pay attention to where the gauge is at. Keep the air conditioning where it's at. Keep the heater where it's at. I don't want you to change anything. I want you to get on the freeway, and I want to know if it cools off on the freeway or if it gets hotter. If it cools off on the freeway, we have fan issues. We have airflow across the radiator. So when you go around the city streets at 40 miles an hour, we have so much pressure, so much air going across the radiator. But when you're doing 65 or 70, or in some cases on I-10, 150 miles an hour, then we've got lots of air across the radiator. So you're going to say, Mark, I'll drop the width of two needles when I'm on the freeway. Or you're going to say, I go up the width of two needles when I'm on the freeway. So if you drop two needle widths, then we have an airflow problem. If you go up, we got a plugged up radiator. That's all there is to it. That's exactly where you're at. This is an easy one to do. Now, the first thing I would want you to do is tomorrow morning, I want you to look at the coolant jug, and I want it to be between the hot and the cold mark, somewhere in between there. I don't want it to be empty, and I don't want it to be full, okay? Mm-hmm. Then I want you to push down on the radiator cap and turn it to lefty-loosey and take the radiator cap off, and I want to make sure that the coolant level is right to the top of the radiator.
When it's cold.
When it's cold.
Yeah.
First thing in the morning. So if it's not, then what's going on is we probably have a leak somewhere, and rather than suck the coolant out of the overflow into the radiator, it's sucking air through the leak. And that's because the radiator has a little less fluid than it normally has, therefore the temperature's gone up, and perhaps the coolant jug is completely out of range, and so those are the issues.
Mark, that this radiator doesn't have a radiator cap, because, I mean, I can't recall. I've never had to add fluid to it.
Okay.
The overflow tank is, I know where that is, and that's half full.
Okay. Does the overflow tank have a flimsy plastic cap on it?
It's got a real substantial cap. It's a solid cap.
Okay. Then I'm probably wrong about that then. Sometimes you have a radiator cap and sometimes you don't, but it depends on the cap on the coolant overflow jug. If it's a substantial cap and it obviously has a heavy-duty gasket and there's no way anything can escape the tub without the cap coming off, then there is no radiator cap. You're right.
All right.
But that doesn't mean I'm still not going to try to fill it. So,
if it's half full now, is that where it ought to be?
Yes. Yes, what I want to see is, here's what happens. As your cooling system gets warmer, it pushes water expands and it pushes coolant into the jug, okay? When you park it at night, as the water cools off and as the engine cools off, the water level drops. Behind the water level is suction. So as the water level drops, it sucks fluid out of the overflow and fills the radiator up. So at night, we got fluid going into the radiator, and during the day, we got fluid going out of the radiator. That's the reason why the hot and cold mark are so far apart, is because we're moving all that coolant. Now, you could have a bad radiator cap, or on a coolant cap. You could have a bad cap that's allowing that transition not to occur, because the cap has to have a vacuum valve and a pressure valve. So I don't know if the cap's, you know, brand new on your O2 Cavalier, or if you change it. If you're going to change the cap, a Stant would be the brand I would look for. STANT. That's the cap I like. But if you took it into the car, in a car repair shop, and Andy, I'll ask you, in ranges, my car's been running a little hotter than before. It's maybe, it used to run here, and now it's running about 3 needle widths, maybe 4 needle widths to the right of it. It's running in an area I've never been before. What would you charge me to check it out?
I would probably say 35 to 55.
Okay. And I'll explain the checkout to you. We're going to get the system opened up. We're going to put a pressure test on it. We're going to pump it up. We're going to look at the cap. It's 14-pound cap. I'm going to pump it to 15 pounds of pressure. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to look inside the car to see if the heater core is leaking. I'm going to look underneath the car to see if there's any coolant leaking. And if the gauge doesn't move and I put 15 in it and 20 minutes later still got 15 in it, I know that system's airtight.
Yeah.
If it goes from 15 down to 9, I better look for the leak. I'm going to find the leak somewhere. So at that particular point, if it's hole and pressure, then I'm going to take the cap. The cap is already off. I'm going to take the cap and put an adapter on my air pump. I'm going to pump the cap, and then when I pump it to 14 pounds, it should hold. But when I pump 15, it should go like this. And it's going to vent at 15, but hold at 14. But if it's a 14-pound cap and I pump it, and at 10 it goes, then it's venting.
Yeah.
So I got a bad cap.
And definitely go, if you take it into a shop, try the freeway versus city driving and see if that makes it better or worse, because that's going to make a difference to the shop.
If you go in and say, when I go on the freeway, it gets hotter by the needle width of 2 or 3, I don't care about the fan at this point, it just gets hotter, I know the radiator's plugged up. I know it is, because we're pushing water through the radiator so fast, it's not having a tough, it's having a tough time dropping its heat off. The water's coming into the train station, but it's going through the train station at 100 miles an hour. Because instead of being 40 tunnels, it's only got 10. So the water comes in and goes right through. When it's got 40 tunnels from left to right, then the water just lazily goes through the radiator and drops off its heat and goes in hot and comes out cold. But a radiator that's plugged, all of a sudden we're funneling all this water into a particular tunnel that's quite smaller than the whole radiator. So that's kind of how it works. Well, good luck to you. Thank you very much. That was a good question. All right, let me talk to you about Action Auto Repair up at I-17 and Deer Valley Road. We talked about him earlier in the hour. He's a full-service, family-owned and operated auto repair shop. He's been around since 1983, and I've known Tom since the early 80s. Whatever your repairs are need, from an oil change to a tire rotation to brakes to electrical work to emissions work, whatever, they're good at it. He has an ASE. He has numerous ASE Master Certified Technician, but he also has a BMW Certified Technician. So if you have a Beamer, then, if you live near the area of I-17 and Deer Valley, then Tom would be a good place for you to develop a relationship with. So that's what it's all about. And when we'll see you next Saturday here at 10 o'clock, and we're going to do car show from 10 to 12, but between 9 and 10, we have Swap Shop Phoenix, where we help you sell your junk. I'll see you next Saturday right here on 960 KKNT.